Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Gantkos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We greet our new affiliate today, WMQM AM 1600 in Memphis, Tennessee. That's a 50,000-watt station that has joined both Mark Gantkos, America, as well as our outreach for the Republic Broadcasting Network. After our first commercial break, I will have my tech hook up with William Norman Grigg, who is formerly of the New Republic. And Will is going to be talking about the, among other things, the real American right and what distinguishes us from the fake American right, and just exactly where William Norman Grigg sees things today in regard to the direction of the country and the direction of our foreign policy. You know, I suspect that William Norman Grigg and I would agree on quite a bit, and if not, who knows, 85, 90, 95, 99% of our respective positions on these issues. But one of the things that I mentioned at the at an earlier stage of this broadcast that I continue to wrestle over is what, in regard to what I believe about what is going on, relates to solutions. I'm not sure I have a lot of concrete political solutions to recommend to anyone at this stage of the game in regard to how we effectively overcome this business of empire and the loss of our constitutional and civil rights and the whole way in which the average American seems to be consumed by globalist forces that have no regard for the Constitution of this country or the existence of America as a sovereign nation state, or keeping us out of conflicts, foreign conflicts and entanglements that have nothing to do with the ultimate interest of the average American and what the constitutional framers would have seen as the actual legitimate national security policy of this country. This is an ongoing struggle, it seems to me, on the American right for, in my lifetime, there has been a real division between what I would properly see as the old American right, which was suspicious of foreign entanglements, hostile to the idea of being involved in unending foreign wars, which opposed public debt, which opposed Leviathan government at the federal level that was annihilating the whole doctrine of states' rights. And certainly the old American right would have been appalled by the extent to which today establishment figures in the Republican Party are supporting a full-fledged movement toward world government, it seems to me, talking about NAFTA, and GATT, and the World Trade Organization, and all of these other entities that quite clearly are involved in world government. It becomes abundantly clear that we're talking in this instance about something that does not fundamentally involve those sorts of principles that were embodied in our Constitution and that were articulated by our founding fathers. And that's some of the stuff that we'll talk about with William Norman Grigg today after the first commercial break. This takes me back, of course, to a period of time in my own life, going back to the, say, the mid to late 1980s, when I was just starting to wonder, about the establishment wing of the Republican Party. A lot of other people had gotten it far earlier than that, and so I was a slow learner on a very slow learning curve. But I remember in my days as a district chairman for the Republican Party in King County, Seattle, that I was just starting to look askance at some of the things that were coming out of George Herbert Walker Bush and Jack Kemp and Ronald Reagan and some of the other revered establishment figures in traditional Republicanism. I was beginning to see in those days that there was a total disconnect between the kinds of policies that I believed I was supporting by voting for these people and what was actually happening in regard to the direction of this country's domestic and foreign policies, a tendency that has only accelerated in the last 20 years. This is Mark Gantkos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be back with William Norman Grigg. Stay tuned.
Your life demands long-lasting power for everything. If you want to find the best battery selection at the best prices, then BatteryStation.com is the place for you. Find common or hard-to-find batteries for practically everything, from computer backup units and camcorders to cell phones and wheelchairs. Go to BatteryStation.com for all your battery supply needs. At BatteryStation.com, you'll also discover high-tech LED tactical flashlights for every task, from trusted names like Surefire, Tektite, Gerber, Pelican, and more. BatteryStation.com offers lights featuring super bright, super tough, long life LED technology. At BatteryStation.com, you'll find tough, crush proof, waterproof, airtight, hard cases of all sizes from Pelican, Otter, and S3 Extreme. Visit them today, BatteryStation.com. It's all one word, BatteryStation.com. Or call 417-257-7799. That's 417-257-7799. Your source for batteries and accessories at very low prices. BatteryStation.com.
Attention, attention everyone. A brand new invention just released. It's called WristEase, the new patented portable ergonomic wrist support. WristEase comforts your wrists from the sometimes painful tasks of typing, writing, using a mouse or adding machine. Unlike most conventional wrist pads that are either attached to a mouse pad or lay flat in front of your keyboard, WristEase is totally portable and ideal for laptop users and technicians who are constantly on the go. WristEase is perfect for children doing homework or playing video games. WristEase provides the proper comfort and support for all ages and provides comfort for victims of carpal tunnel syndrome and other repetitive injuries. You can order WristEase now at WristEase.com. That's WristEase, WristEase, WristEase.com. Once again, that's WristEase, WristEase.com.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Cost America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is William Norman Grigg. He was the senior editor and a prolific contributor to The New American, the official magazine of the John Birch Society. According to Wikipedia, his writing reflects views heavily influenced by constitutionalism, libertarianism, and anti-communism. He's authored a number of books, including America's Engineered Decline, Global Gun Grab, Freedom on the Altar, the UN's Crusade Against God and Family, and The Gospel of Revolt, Feminism Versus the Family. Will, how are you, sir?
I'm doing better. I'm wrestling with my annual bout of Venusian flu or whatever mutant strain I succumb to every February, but I'm doing better. I appreciate it.
Well, good. I've been fighting this whole cedar fever thing down here in Texas, which...
It's no fun at all.
It's no fun at all, and... particularly when you have to talk on the radio for 3 hours a day and then do church services on Sunday, and I have Lent coming up, so I'll have to utilize my voice for those. But since you're an old pro at this sort of thing, I understand that you know, your voice goes through the same kind of punishment, I'm sure.
Exactly.
Yes. Since I have advertised you, I think, correctly and legitimately as one of the real icons on the old American right that pretty much tells it like it is, what do you see going on now in regard to our movement, where you have a clear division between people on the right that I think truly are committed to the Constitution and to liberty and staying out of foreign wars and getting out of the UN and all these other things? And then you have these ersatz conservatives, mm-hmm. of the Bush Gingrich variety, of course, who are supporting central banking, and they're supporting foreign wars, and they're supporting this whole movement toward the American empire and public debt and all of these other things that indicate that there has been a hijacking, as it were, of what has been called historically the American conservative movement. Where do you think this hijacking is taking us, and how do we get not only the movement back, but get the country back?
I think that's a pretty good analysis. I do think that the direction that we're headed is a combination of national bankruptcy and almost a type of banana republic authoritarianism. Somebody said, I think it was probably Gore Vidal, said this roughly 15 years ago, that we're probably headed in sort of a direction comparable to that Brazil ended up taking. Brazil really should be a superpower in terms of its population, its resource base. It's got a very talented population of people. Every time I turn around, it seems as if some Brazilian is doing something remarkable in a field relevant to the arts or sciences or something. But they have a government that, of course, is extravagantly corrupt and intermittently authoritarian. Their president right now, of course, is a Marxist. I think that what's happened in terms of the division you're talking about is that on the one hand, you have people who at least pay some fealty to the Constitution as the measuring stick for government policy, and they apply it without fear or favor and without any real regard for their own personal popularity. If you take the Constitution as your measuring stick, chances are you're not going to be playing for the team. You're looking at this as something that transcends mere partisan advantage. And on the other hand, you've got people who are defined either by the leader principle, which is what the real hardcore base of Bush supporters subscribe to, the idea that irrespective of what the leader does, as long as the leader does it, it's consecrated by the fact that the leader does it. And on the other hand, you have people who are merely opportunistic or who are interested in victory uber Allah. I do think that one of the things that is really unfortunate in American culture, American popular culture, particularly over the last 50 or 60 years, is the idea, sort of summarized in Vince Lombardi's phrase, that winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. And victory is always defined, of course, in ending up on top of whatever conflict you're involved in, no matter what types of sacrifices you have to make in order to win, what kinds of compromises you have to make in order to win. And politics has become characterized by that. And particularly in the last 4 or 5 years, actually, I'd say starting in about 2002 or so, the midterm elections in 2002, the Republican-dominated element of the conservative movement seems to have defined itself by the idea that it doesn't really matter what we do as long as we hold on to power. Then it's a victory. And so victory is defined by obtaining power and retaining power at whatever expense to principle. That becomes the only principle people really care about, is whether or not they hold on to power. And, of course, the older right, the people who have a longer historical perspective and whose objectives and goals are more resonant with those of the founding fathers, understand that if we retain power by sacrificing the institutions and principles of a republic, then it's no victory. And I think that's the division we're talking about right here. And quite frankly, I think that in terms of the damage being done to our country, what the radical left represents is nowhere near as bad as what the so-called conservative Republican right has managed to accomplish over the last several years, consolidating power in the executive branch and basically treating the Constitution as if it were a set of hortatory pronouncements of no particular practical value. And
I think that's an absolutely key point, Will. I mean, I have come to the conclusion, I think I've believed this in some visceral way for a lot of years, but I've come to the conclusion in these last 5 or 6 years when I look at the fact that we now have a $2.9 trillion federal budget. We're running the largest trade and account deficits in American history, depending on whose figures you believe. Even aside from the Defense Department and the intelligence agencies and the massive increases in their budgets because of 9/11, we're talking about somewhere between a 25% and a 35% increase in the size of the federal government across the board just since Bush has been in office, and this is in tandem with a Republican Congress. Then there's this whole issue of the war in Iraq and the circumstances under which that was undertaken. And again, I know that you're familiar with all of these figures, the fact we spent almost $400 billion in this thing, not the $50 billion that Wolfowitz advertised. And the meter's running, and it looks like we're about ready to get involved in a war with Iran. And the list of things just goes on and on. I think when I examine all of this, that it would tend to corroborate what I sense is your theory, and that is that Rockefeller Republicanism is almost infinitely more dangerous than the traditional left-wing brand of expression in American politics.
Yeah, one of the things that we find is that people who are nominally conservative will talk about the lesser of two evils. They'll say that Rockefeller Republicans, Bush-style Republicanism, while not exactly the most desirable political brand on offer, at least is better than, say, John Kerry variety Democrat liberalism. And the problem is that the lesser of two evils is actually the greater of the two evils, because it's the evil that actually ends up being done. People try to avoid the theoretical greater evil, and they settle for the lesser evil, which means they're settling for evil. And so I think that particularly in the last couple of elections where we've had, in the case of 2004, you had two New England liberals, both of whom, of course, had a background in Skull and Bones, as the choices at the presidential level, we saw that you had an almost interchangeable options here, almost an interchangeable set of options, and people settled for the lesser of the two evils, and as a result, we are heading, I think, imminently into national bankruptcy. And given everything that's been done in terms of creating the lineaments of a genuine police state, a genuine garrison state, that, of course, is a uniquely unappetizing prospect. Last time we had a depression, you did not have a national security or homeland security state with a set of doctrines that claim broad discretionary authority to imprison people at whim without resort to the Anglo-Saxon due process guarantees that have defined us as a republic since before we were a republic, quite frankly. I mean, the colonial period, of course, when the American colonists were under the domain of Great Britain, they still had recourse to conventional Anglo-Saxon due process guarantees, the most important of which, of course, was habeas corpus. Habeas corpus died last October, and we're just now beginning to understand, I think some of us are beginning to understand what that portends for our country, particularly if we end up in the worst of all possible situations, a perfect storm of foreign war, economic collapse, and social turmoil from the collapse of our borders. And I think a lot of this has to do, once again, with some flaws that are innate to our culture, some misplaced priorities that unfortunately have been very common before the most recent decades, but also it has to do with the fact that the Republican Party, under the leadership of Bush and with the support of his media auxiliaries, have created this system that now is likely to come to very evil and very imminent fruition.
Would you say that it would be safe to say that this is not an accident, that we are dealing with something here that has been enacted upon us and will be enacted upon us by a conspiratorial design?
I think that there is definite design at work here. I don't think that the designers are in control of all the variables. I mean, anytime you take a country to war, you're rolling the iron dice, as the Kaiser said in World War One. But there is
Bill, hold your thought there. We've got to cut away for a break. So when we come back, I want you to take up this theme. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be back with William Norman Grigg. Stay tuned.
People who use Cartavite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartavite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartavite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartavite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, 2 months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our Cartavite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonant frequency. If the resonant frequency making the glass vibrate is powerful enough, the size of the vibration will become so large the glass shatters. Using this same principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease-causing organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions Frequency Instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free, 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. Once again, 1-866-885-6625.
This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is William Norman Grigg. We've been talking about the real American right, as opposed to the ersatz version. We've been talking about the movement toward empire in this country, as well as the creation of a domestic police state. And I was just talking with Will before the break about whether or not he considered this to be a part of a conspiratorial design. He then began to answer by saying that the people involved in this, while they have a design, don't control all the variables. Go ahead, Will.
Well, one thing that happens, particularly when you engage in a war, is that you quickly learn that you cannot control everything. You can set the template, if you will, for a war, but it never works out quite the way that you expect it to. And I've mentioned that in World War One, when the decision was made for to set in motion this horrible catastrophe, it was referred to in history as rolling the iron dice, because you really just don't know how things are going to turn out. And we can show, of course, as you know, and as your listeners are no doubt aware, we can show from the documents of this Project for a New American Century that there was a design to take our country to war against Iraq as part of this grand strategy, basically for clearing the Middle East of all these regimes that were seen as threatening primarily to Israel. And the idea was that you'd have a chain reaction or a domino effect that would result in a democratized Middle East. Well, it's not quite turning out that way, I don't think. And the same thing is true when you're talking about some of the larger designs that are happening in this hemisphere with respect to NAFTA, the deepening of NAFTA into this proposed security and prosperity partnership, and the CAFTA agreement, and the envisioned free trade area of the Americas. There are aspects of this, of course, which are not quite turning out the way that its architects, people like David Rockefeller, who made a point of chatting up Vice President Cheney in a meeting of the Council on Foreign Relations several years ago on this specific subject, that of the free trade area of the Americas. They've been driving in the direction of consolidating the Western Hemisphere into a European Union-style political condominium for a number of decades. And there is some opposition to this, which is not only coming from the conventional American right, meaning people who want to preserve our national integrity, our national identity, and the institutions which define us as a republic, but also from populists of left-wing variety, particularly in Latin America, some of whom want to pursue their own transnational arrangements. Others want to avoid simply being dominated by Washington. And so it's a little bit more complicated than they assume. But once again, there are people who are definitely trying to set the dials and trying to define the priorities that will govern us and define our future for us. And I find it profoundly offensive that there are people who are presuming to define the future for my children. And I think that that's true of most people who belong to the genuine American right, who reject all of this, all the works and pops of this ersatz conservatism you're talking about.
What is your reading? You made brief reference to it in regard to the Project for a New American Century, and obviously the way in which that has been connected to the notion of utilizing American military power and force in the Middle East to protect Israel's interests. To what extent do you think the Israeli lobby controls the American political process in this country, particularly in foreign policy?
There's a really interesting book by Leon Hadar called Sandstorm. You might be familiar with Leon Hadar at the Cato Institute. He was born and raised in Israel. And he points out that there are really two dominant Middle Eastern lobbies, one of whom is the Israeli lobby, the influence of which really is self-evident. There's simply no escaping the fact that the Israeli lobby is immensely powerful, to the point where in Washington and elsewhere, people very rarely speak of it in tones louder than a whisper. But there's also a Saudi lobby as well, and that's to be expected when you're talking about our chief energy supplier and regime that pumps a lot of money into this country and is active in supporting and promoting some of the mosques that are involved in cultivating the Wahhabist variety of Islam and so forth. The thing that Leon Hadar points out is that these two lobbies really are sort of working for a relationship of parity, in the sense that the Saudis the Saudis control certain elements of our political elite, and the Israelis control other elements of the political elite. And we're really in a situation, according to Leon Hadar, where you almost have a proxy political war going on involving these two lobbies. I'm not sure I entirely subscribe to that point of view, but I do find it really provocative, because it makes a lot of sense when you understand how, during the 1990s, for instance, we had the spectacle of the American government promoting the interests of Saudi-supported radical Muslim movements in Bosnia, in Kosovo, and elsewhere. And then starting in 2001, we seem to have flipped over to where, for the first several years of the Bush administration, we were more or less carrying out a set of policies that resonated with the interests of Israel. Although in the case of George W. Bush and his family, you've got some interesting ties to the Saudi oil interests as well. In any case, it has nothing to do with the national interest of the United States. That much is certain.
We'll be back with William Norman Gregg. This is Mark Dankos America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned. You can give us a call at 1-800-313-9443. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits. No increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Obviously, something serious is going on, politically, economically, geologically, and environmentally. And how you prepare for those changes will determine your well-being in the very near future. Now, whether you're preparing for your family, your business, or your country, the Survival Center has the knowledge and experience to assist you in those decisions. Survival Center is America's premier supplier of family preparedness, health, and survival supplies with over 33 years of continuous operation. Now, you can start preparing with just knowledge, and that's why the Survival Center is offering a book. It's called Basic Preparedness, and it's just $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And it'll teach you about the four basics of survival: food, water, medical, and shelter. And when you order that book, you'll also get a free Survival Center catalog. Contact us today so we can help you prepare for whatever comes your way. Call us toll-free at 1-800-321-2900 or online at www.survivalcenter.com.
Many Bible prophecies written thousands of years ago have been fulfilled in the past 100 years. Unknown by most people, even Bible-reading Christians, major end-time prophecies are being fulfilled today, including the one-world government, the one-world religion, the 10-nation confederacy of Daniel and Revelation, the mark of the beast, or 666. Speculation abounds about these ancient prophecies and what they might mean today. Now, one of the most foremost scholars on geopolitics, Dr. Michael Kaufman, who has stopped the ratification of international treaties in the U.S. Senate, has just released a DVD called World Events and Prophecy. His DVD explains how these and other major prophecies are being fulfilled today. Order your copy of World Events and Prophecy. It's only $20 plus shipping and handling at discerningtoday.org or call toll-free 877-271-7639. Don't be caught off guard. Order your copy of World Events and Prophecy at discerningtoday.org.
We're back. This is Mark Dankos America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're back with William Norman Gregg talking about all kinds of things related to the real American right as opposed to the ersatz version of it, and speaking about the rather ominous direction that things are taking both in terms of foreign policy as well as the development of a domestic police state. And the way in which all of this dovetails into what quite clearly is a crisis, not only for the American right, but for a whole host of Americans that have not necessarily been with us historically, who are beginning to see that we've had a point all along. Will, in regard to the way you see things shaping up, Let's look at political alternatives. Quite clearly, among the major party candidates, there really aren't any, with the exception of Ron Paul in the Republican Party. And I would suggest that I don't think Ron's going to get very far in this process for all of the obvious reasons. As you look at this present crisis that we find ourselves in, depending on how draconian it actually gets, what would be your ideas in regard to potential political and economic solutions to what quite clearly is a crisis of apocalyptic proportions potentially?
It's beyond my competence to prescribe an economic solution. I think it's beyond the competence of just about anybody. You're dealing with some obvious things that must be done. Obviously, government has to stop the orgy of deficit spending that is utterly ruining us. I mean, I don't know if it's possible, if it resides within the realm of human capacity, to bring our country into solvency. I don't know if that's possible. It may have gone so far that it's literally too late to do anything about our impending utter bankruptcy. I mean, we've been bankrupt for a long, long time. What's happened is that, in my opinion, to borrow from Machiavelli's categories here, it's been the iron that we could bring to bear on the battlefield rather than the gold that we can spend that has created a receptiveness on the part of the world to the U.S. dollar as the world's reserve currency. Given that the dollar is not backed by gold or silver or pewter or anything else, but the full faith and credit of the United States government, it's got to be something that made people willing to take it, and I think it's been the perception that we were the world's hyperpower. Well, that perception, I think, is dying rudely in Iraq right now, and so it seems to be that you've got China actually becoming more or less the rising economic hegemon, and I really don't know that this is going to continue because their economy is riddled with the same kinds of corruptions and inefficiencies as ours is, plus the entire mess that is the residue of their communist system from decades past. So I don't know if there's going to be a world reserve currency anytime in the near future. But with respect to the political alternatives here, in terms of curing our problems, it doesn't reside within the realm of presidential politics. Obviously, you're not going to elect some man on the proverbial white horse who's going to clean things up. I do think that one of the really encouraging things happening right now is happening largely below the radar, and that has been movement on the part of many state legislatures and many communities, smaller than states, to resist the impositions out of Washington. I mean, the old doctrine of interposition is making a comeback, and it's not making a comeback necessarily on the right, but rather on sort of the populist civil libertarian left with respect to things like the Real ID Act and some resolutions that are being passed beginning in Vermont and a couple of other places like that, demanding impeachment hearings into the manifold abuses and crimes committed by George W. Bush against our Constitution. And the fact that you've got this sudden rediscovery of the virtues of interposition by people who previously had not displayed a whole lot of enthusiasm for it, I find that very encouraging. Whether or not that's something that can be done in suitably rapid fashion to save our country from what we're confronting, I don't know, but it's definitely something I think needs to be tried. We have to start taking power back from Washington, D.C., and the first thing we have to do, obviously, and this is something that Bush has already done, but it's not been widely recognized, we have to delegitimize the imperial presidency. There was a period, of course, back in the 1700s, just before the War for Independence began, when it was seen as something of a sacrilege to criticize the king. And, of course, people like Samuel Adams and Thomas Paine desacralized the person of King George III. It had to be done. People had to be divested of this notion that the monarch, the executive, if you will, of the British Empire was somehow above and beyond reproach and accountability, that there was some kind of holiness that was invested in his person by virtue of his office. Well, that's the sort of thing that has to happen right now if the right is going to survive. People have to come to realize that there is nothing special about the United States president as the office is defined by the Constitution. He's simply the head of one branch of one of many governments in our multi-layered republic. And unfortunately, during the Bush administration, we've seen this rapid accumulation of power in the person of the presidency, and that power has to be taken back, and it should be taken back from Washington in general, and that's why I'm encouraged by a lot of things that are happening in the states, happening at the level of states.
What do you think are the, if you had to guess, and obviously it's a guess on either your part or mine, but on a percentage basis, what do you think are the odds that we'll be at war with Iran before the year's out?
I'd say something on the order of 75-25 in favor of war. It's transparently obvious that the Bush administration wants us to go to war with Iran. There's no getting away from that fact. They're doing everything they can right now to confect the casus belli. And the only thing really that's keeping us, I think, from a war in Iran, and this is a horrifying position to be in, is the relative moderation of the regime in Tehran, because there have been manifold provocations over the last couple of years in the form of movements that have been supported by the Bush administration within Iran and obvious deliberate attempts to try to create an incident with Iran, and so far Iran has been intelligent enough not to bite on the lure. And given what we know about that regime, it is an awful regime led by a messianic fanatic who, in terms of both his physiognomy and his principles, resembles George W. Bush quite a bit. It's just a really sobering thing that we have their relative moderation to thank for the fact that we're not already at war. You may be aware, and some of your listeners are probably aware as well, that beginning in 2003, there were efforts made by Iran, back-channel communications made by Iran to Washington, inviting Washington to sit down and have a plenary discussion of complaints and grievances and problems with the objective of normalizing relations between Washington and Iran. At the very least, that's something that we should have explored. But the Bush administration, of course, was not receptive to this idea because they said by talking to them we would be acknowledging their legitimacy. Well, I've got news for you. They've been in power now for a number of decades. Whether or not you like it, they are the legitimate government of Iran. And if you're interested in avoiding a war and maybe bringing about the palliation of some of the problems that we have, it's a good idea to sit down and at least to talk. But the Bush administration back in 2003 was at the height of its hubris as the world's defining power, and they figured that it wasn't necessary, that Iraq would fall, and pretty soon Iran would fall as well. And so, of course, we end up in a situation now where, despite the fact that the war in Iraq is a huge hemorrhage, we're likely to find our nation committed to yet another war with Iran that would be even more disastrous. Iran being a much larger country with a much larger military, a country composed primarily of hills that would nullify in many instances the technological advantage we would have in terms of our armor and air power, and it would be a disaster that could very well break our military. We could be literally in a position of losing our army entirely if the war metastasizes into a regional conflict.
Yeah, and I lived in Iran years ago. My father, back in the 70s, after he left the American Air Force, was serving as a logistical director for the Shah's Imperial Iranian Air Force.
Okay.
And so I had some opportunities in the 70s to see that country and to get to know some of its various places, even outside of Tehran. And to me, I share, Will, your position on this thing that we don't know what we're getting into. I mean, in regard to what seems to be a complete underestimation of the Iranian, not only the Iranian military, but getting into what I've said on this show before is a 2,500-year history on the part of the Iranians of dealing with foreign invaders and foreign incursions and so forth. And with what I saw just of that country and what they later proved they were capable of during the Iran-Iraq War from 1980 to 1988, it's hard for me to imagine American governmental and military planners, particularly with what's already going on in Iraq, believing that they can take Iran on in this thing and not suffer just a catastrophic situation. I mean, I'm looking at this whole thing and seeing a military and political and economic blowback from it that would just be incalculable.
I agree. I think that it's interesting that during the 1980s, you mentioned the Iran-Iraq War, Iraq was actually backed by two superpowers. They were backed by the Soviet Union and by the United States in a war that began with Iraqi aggression against Iran, and Iran prevailed over Iraq. Granted, they did so through the use of horrible means, you know, waves of martyr soldiers, often young children who went into minefields wearing the keys to heaven around their neck. It was just a horrible, unfathomably bizarre and repulsive spectacle. But the fact is that Iran prevailed in its war with Iraq in the sense that it successfully repelled an aggression that was being backed by Washington and by Moscow at the time. And so I think that it's a grotesque underestimation of Iran's capacity, as you say, to believe that we'd be able to make the Iranian regime pliable to Washington's will through airstrikes and some other military means. It's just not going to happen. I do think it's interesting as well that, from what I understand, Iran, meaning the people of Iran, not the regime of Iran, in the aftermath of September 11th, from the reports I've read, there were candlelight vigils on the streets of Tehran after September 11th, because irrespective of the hostilities that have characterized relations between the United States and Iran since about 1953 or even earlier, there's still a great deal of pro-American sentiment, not among the radicals, obviously, not among the type of people who seized our embassy in 1979, but among the typical rank-and-file Iranians, there's still a great deal of residual sympathy for the United States. Well, it seems that Washington's doing its best to cure them of that problem, unfortunately.
Yes, and that exactly. That's my read on the whole thing, too. And as you look at it, if the worst transpires out of this whole thing, I keep thinking that maybe the silver lining in this absolutely horrible cloud will be that maybe this whole thing would be the straw that breaks the American empire's back, and the American people would recognize that what we need is a return to the old republic and not to this kind of empire abroad with all of the horrors that have been visited upon us just in the last few years, and that maybe it's going to take something this cataclysmically bad to force the American public out of passivity and back toward a sort of activism that leads to a restoration of the Constitution. What do you think?
That's a possibility. I mean, it's been said, of course, that experience keeps a dear school, but fools will have no other. It's daunting, to put it mildly, to imagine the cost that would be incurred if we actually found ourselves caught in a regional war with the destruction of an entire army. You know, Rome, on a couple of occasions, lost entire armies, and they managed to survive for a couple of centuries as a corrupt and degenerate empire. It's difficult to know which direction we would go if we ended up having a hugely humiliating defeat in a regional war in the Middle East, and we withdrew into our own perimeter, if you will. The upside is that we would have an opportunity to reconstruct our own Republican institutions, reconstitute our public institutions on the Republican model. I do believe, however, that there is a contending tendency, and you find it very obvious on the Republican right, to nurture a grievance based on a stab in the back myth. That's, of course, something we read about in Weimar Germany, where there's this embittered, curdled desire for vengeance on the assumption that it was our internal enemies who weakened our will and prevented us from achieving this glorious victory, and they're the ones that have to be dealt with very rudely. You can hear and read some specimens of that type of thinking just over the last weekend. For instance, you had the word treason on the page of the New York Post with respect to the resolution of the House opposing the surge, the troop surge in Iraq. You can get that kind of rhetoric coming from people who say that it's a species of aid, providing aid and comfort to the enemy, to say that there's something wrong with the policy in Iraq that has led us to this pass. The idea, once again, is that I call it clap for Tinkerbell patriotism, where people act as if if we speak against our dear leader, then that somehow diminishes his power to protect us from the enemies who want to destroy us all. And if we were confronted with a situation in which we were forced to back into our continental perimeter, I believe that that element of the right would be seeking to bring about vengeance, first of all, rather than seeking to restore our republican institutions. And I don't know that that element has a whole lot of assets at its disposal, but I do know that right now it is pretty much thoroughly in control of the Republican Party. It has the entire television network to itself, you know, Fox. It controls almost all of talk radio. It's in charge of a lot of the money that's spent on political donations and candidacies coming out of New York. So if we ended up being forced back into our own hemisphere, and we had the opportunity to discuss this issue, they'd have a running start, a running head start on us in some ways. But I think that if we ended up in that, living out that scenario, chances are we would have, I think, an opportunity at the very least to rectify the situation we're in. Whereas the course we're taking right now, it's just, unless it changes, the course we're taking right now will lead us to catastrophe.
Yes. We'll be back with William Norman Grigg. This is Mark Dankos America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. When we come back, we'll have about 7 minutes to go. Stay tuned.
People who use Cartavite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartavite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartavite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartavite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, a few months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our Cartavite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822.
Do you suffer from frequent and severe headaches? Well, you don't have to any longer. Headache Stay Gone is an all-natural headache remedy that is free of all side effects. Headache Stay Gone will cure any headache and prevent it from returning again. Painkillers can offer temporary relief at best, along with a long list of harmful side effects. Headache Stay Gone uses all-natural ingredients and cures your headache, letting you enjoy more time with your family and loved ones. We'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone today and send you the bill. Wait until your headache is cured before you pay for it. That's right, Headache Stay Gone must work for you before you pay for it. Try Headache Stay Gone risk-free by calling 1-800-327-0727 or visit www.headachestaygone.com. Again, that's 1-800-327-0727. And don't forget to ask about your risk-free trial today. Call now. Start living life without the headaches.
Your life demands long-lasting power for everything. If you want to find the best battery selection at the best prices, then BatteryStation.com is the place for you. Find common or hard-to-find batteries for practically everything, from computer backup units and camcorders to cell phones and wheelchairs. Go to BatteryStation.com for all your battery supply needs. At BatteryStation.com, you'll also discover high-tech LED tactical flashlights for every task, from trusted names like Surefire, Tektite, Gerber, Pelican, and more. BatteryStation.com offers lights featuring super bright, super tough, long life LED technology. At BatteryStation.com, you'll find tough, crush proof, waterproof, airtight, hard cases of all sizes from Pelican, Otter, and S3 Extreme. Visit them today, BatteryStation.com. It's all one word, BatteryStation.com. Or call 417-257-7799. That's 417-257-7799. Your source for batteries and accessories at very low prices. BatteryStation.com.
Mark Dankoff's America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're in the final minutes of our conversation today with William Norman Grigg, one of the real giants of the American right and American right-wing journalism of the best variety. Will, in terms of your own personal and professional situation, where are your articles being posted right now, if anywhere, and what do you see as your next move personally and professionally in regard to bringing your work back into the swing with wider audiences again?
The editor-at-large for a website called The Right Source, which is available at rightsourceonline.com. Once again, that's rightsourceonline.com.
Okay.
One of the things that we have been doing is daily news feed, obviously, and the big project that we're working on right now is an e-zine or electronic magazine called Pro Libertate, which should be up either today or tomorrow. I was just trying to see if it was up right now, but Pro Libertate will be an expandable electronic journal that would include not only the articles, and of course with hyperlinks you can learn a whole lot more from a journal or from an article in that format than you can from a print journal. One of the criticisms we always had of New American, I was there, was why can't you footnote your articles? Well, we can't. It's space prohibitive in terms of a biweekly news journal. But, of course, when you have the option of hyperlinking, you can do that. That's one thing we're doing there. But we're also going to expand that to include podcasts, audio and video podcasts, and some other things of that sort. I also have my personal blog, which is also called Pro Libertate, although in order to avoid confusion, I might be renaming it soon. And that's at freedominourtime.blogspot.com, or better yet, more easily, you can go to Right Source Online, and it's available there at the Right Source Online. There's a link that you can hit there. I'm not sure exactly what else I'm going to be doing professionally. I'm writing a new book. The working title of it is From Republic to Reich, How the Imperial Presidency Devoured the Bill of Rights, and the manuscript for that should be done in the next couple of weeks. When that'll be coming out, I don't know exactly, but the manuscript should be done this week or next week. And it's an examination, obviously, of the manifold threats to the liberties protected by the Bill of Rights. And it deals heavily with a couple of issues that I've been writing about a great deal lately in my blog, having to do with the centralization and militarization of U.S. law enforcement, and also the destruction of our due process guarantees, most conspicuously, habeas corpus. People, I don't think, are adequately alarmed over what happened last October when, in the course of one day on October 17th, you had Bush sign into law a measure destroying habeas corpus and another measure permitting the President of the United States to take control of the National Guard of the 50 states at his discretion. A just horrible thing that happened last October 17th, the day Liberty died.
William Norman Grigg, I want to thank you for coming on Mark Dankoff's America and the Republic Broadcasting Network. I want to have you on in the future. You and I will be in conversation about getting you on this show more than once because I want to expose people to your work on a regular basis. They can find you right now at rightsourceonline.com. I'll mention that website throughout the week and also post it to Breaking All the Rules News, the paleo-conservative news service that will give William Norman Grigg's website much wider exposure in the next 24 hours. Thanks, Will, for coming on. We'll be in conversation about future appearances on your part on this show, and we'll be back tomorrow. God bless.